Mr. Wilkinson, Reel 7. We're still in the Ghazala box, Mr. Wilkinson. What began to happen, what changes were taking place as the enemy moved closer to the box prior to the Meyer attack?
Well, what happened was that the South Africans were in the northern sector of the Ghazalas, and he attacked the Ghazala line where the South Africans were first. He couldn't make any headway there, so he came down the line. He was trying to penetrate the line until he came to the 69th. The 69th Brigade box was the easiest one for him to get through, apparently, because it wasn't quite complete. They hadn't done all the defences that they wanted to do. Now, the Germans came there, and what happened was that the infantry came first, which was normal procedure, and then the tanks followed. But the lads were in their trenches, and as soon as the infantry came, they had a go at them, and they put a lot down. And the tanks wouldn't go forward with the infantry being shot up. So what they did, they came back a little bit, and must have had some discussion. And then they came forward with the tanks in front. And what they did, from what I heard myself, is, and I still hear it today, is that the tanks got under the slip trenches, which is about a yard deep, a yard long, and 18 inches to 2 foot wide. And you could get down and the tanks could run over them. But what happened was that they turned the tanks and ground the people in the ground.
We've got this actually. You've mentioned this already.
But the reason I know that was, you see, you wanted to know how I knew. Well, there's a lot of sounds that people make for different circumstances. Now, if you get a person that's injured by a bullet, then if it's severe and he's in severe pain, he cries and he's crying for help. And it's not all that loud, but it's not piercing. It's just a cry for help. And you hear a lot of them are wounded, and they'll say medics or whatever, somebody shouting medics for them. But when you get a chap that's burning, now his scream is very severe, and all you see is a mould of a white in the bottom when you look when after the tank goes off. When you hear a chap that's being ground in the ground with a tank, you can hear that for miles, and it stays with you. But it's a piercing sort of, and they're getting ground in the ground. You can tell by the way that they react that they're being ground in the ground. The tank is actually turning on top of that slitty. And as they go over the edge, long ways on, as they go there, it takes a lump out, and he can't get out, and they just grind him. And you could hear that quite a lot.
What? how were these actions affecting you? I mean, the action of the...
They've affected this one in particular has affected me all my life.
Yeah, I mean, from the point of view of what was happening during the attacks on the boxes, as far as you were concerned.
As far as I was...
How were you involved in it?
As far as I was concerned, I was prepared to keep as far away from it as I could. I knew that if the tanks did that, although it wasn't necessary in our case, but I knew if they ground you in the ground, there was nothing you could do.
Were you actually fired on at this time?
We'd been fired on before, but not a great deal. He was just probing, that was all. He just probed. South Africans, they didn't feel a lot either, but as he was going down the line, he probed, but he must have done his recce the same as we did them. And he knew way he was going to end up going through. And there's a large area between there and the airfield that was good for tank war, because they could see for miles.
So by this time, Rommel had come round and was behind you?
Was at the side of us, yeah. And we moved.
What happened to the battalion then?
Well, we moved out of the battalion box, and we went down the south. But as I say, the battalion in itself, as far as I know, had the job of escorting the 1st South African Division into Tobruk. So they were going to take all the defence of Tobruk. And we just kept the, as I say, the battalion was on the side of them, would be on the right side.
On the flank.
Going down, yeah. And we were on the far flank, all the carriers and all the S Company in the main were beside Devil's Cauldron, keeping on the side between the Germans and them.
And what happened to you then?
Well, we just carried on, and we kept on plonking a shot or two in when we saw vans, and they kept having a little shot at us. But not a lot happened, because they knew, the Germans knew, or must have known, that our tanks was waiting for them. Now, our tanks was only Valentine's and Matilda's, and theirs was only, at that time, was only Mark 3s and Mark 4s. So there were only little tanks, little guns on them. Anyway,
were you attacked from the air?
We weren't, no. But we saw them after the explosions. We saw the Stukas, there were about a couple of them. And anyway, we saw them, and our attention was attracted to them because we were more or less looking the other way. And we didn't know they were there until such time as the bombs were on the floor. And they bombed the wagons, you see. They didn't bomb us, because there was a division in 2/3, roughly, in that area. And they just come down, whoosh. And you see, that was 2/3 of ours, because we lost the whole brigade, 69. We lost them when Jerry come through. But the bombs bombed where the wagons were going in convoy. So, you know, there was over a wide area.
What happened then to you after this?
Well, I went through Devil's Cauldron and just bypassed, went on the seaside of El Adam. And as I say, I was going to seek water, but the Germans had won the tank battle, I think, at that time, and they fired some shots at me. So I didn't get any water, and I didn't get anything out the nappy. I went straight down the road, and I met up with a battalion again.
And were you on your own, or was it this the whole of S Company that was with you?
I was on my own at that particular time, but S Company must have done similar things, and all the carriers would be away, but I was on, you see, when we left the box, I was on the right hand side, which was the last ones. And anyway, went down the road, and they kept on saying, oh, well, you're surrounded again, you know. And but nothing ever happened, you know. We didn't stop them.
You got through all right.
Yeah.
Because some of them were held up by German troops across the road, trying to block the retreat.
Oh well,
you got clear of that.
I got clear.
Where did you go to then?
Well, when we went, it was at Mersa. We went down to Mersa, and a bit of panic there. Nobody knew where because of in a fast retreat. And anyway, we fought the 90th Light.
What were the positions that you were in at Mersmatru?
Well, where I was in one of the wadis, and I was in the bottom of the wadi, and the others was round about. And what we did, we didn't know where anybody was. You see, that was the trouble. And just your own sort of mates that you knew were in or around this wadi, because what happened, the transport, some of the transport came and they went in the left hand spur of this wadi, and there were 3-ton dodges and that had brought the troops down.
And you were in the wadi with your carrier and mortar, were you?
Mortar, uh-huh. And anyway, we couldn't do much with the mortar anyway, so I did, like the other lads, did quite a lot of wandering about, wondering what things were, where things were, you know. And anyway, at first you couldn't see any Germans, and then we got closer. But because I couldn't fire the mortar, because I didn't know where our troops were, I didn't know the layout of the land or nothing. And anyway, I thought, well, it's a plumb long time of coming, so I dismantled the mortar and I smashed the sight. I thought, well, you're not going to use this. So anyway, we didn't come in for a long time, and I had a walk up the wadi, and I had a walk up the top and had a look over both ends.
And no one was in sight?
No Germans, no.
But the battalion was strung out
all over the place. I don't know the exact location of the troops anyway. But anyway, I kept on looking, and as I say, I hide bits of it. But in the end, I thought, well, it's a long time of coming. So I thought, well, I'll put them all together, and I haven't got a sight to use. So what I'll do, I'll put it on a high trajectory, and because I've seen some Germans, they were a bit nearer then, you see.
Moving towards you.
Yeah.
And were these infantry or tanks or what?
Infantry. And anyway, I put the bomb ready to go down. It may seem funny, like, but it wasn't that funny. But what happened was, I had a bomb ready to go out, you see. The mortar was set up. Really. And I never saw this bloke come from behind. Hadn't a clue. And this bloke jumped into the mortar pit with us. It was only a shallow one, but anyway, he jumped in. And he did. You see, I thought I'd been lucky because I thought he was going to kill us.
He was a German?
Yeah. And because he hadn't shouted to me, he just come up quietly and jumped in the pit. But I think, and this is only my personal opinion, because the bomb went out of the barrel, it frightened him and knocked him off baitness. And he took us prisoner. And anyway, I was taken prisoner, and they were gathering all the odds and sods. So,
can I, before we come into this particular episode, you weren't near Wakenshaw?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Did you see that action?
Well, I couldn't see.
You were in the wadi, weren't you?
Yes, I was in the wadi. But I knew where he was. And
did you know him?
Yes.
What was he like as a soldier?
He was a nice lad. In fact, I was on about my letter going through the battalion. Now, his wife, Dorothy, sent him a letter asking who the woman was that was writing his letter. Because it was, his first name was Francis. I can't remember the other name, I've tried. But his first name was Francis. I can remember that lot. And I can see the lad at odd times. But I can't bring his name forward, his surname. But we often used to talk, because I think Adam was the same nature as me, really. Because we got on like a house of fire when we saw each other. And he was a very nice lad, quiet, and He wasn't very talkative. He, you know, he was sort of selective, and because he thought people, some people, and this is just my thinking, he thought some people were think themselves better than him. And yet he was a very nice lad. But
he had a tough upbringing.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he worked in the pits for a bit. Not much, though. But
did he get into problems with if he got drink? Did he get too much
I've
drink?
I've never seen him drunk. No. In fact, quite a lot of the time, he wouldn't go into towns. He would just stay with the lads. And if his gun crew went out, he would quite often stay, and he would talk to the likes of us that was in different sections. But I liked Adam.
Did he get on well with officers and NCOs?
Well, he stayed aloof to them. He was, it's a funny thing to say, he was a good soldier in a soldier fashion, but he wasn't a smart soldier. He wasn't one of these regimental boys. He was down to earth, and you might think he was a little bit slovenly, not the guardsman type, you know what I mean. He was all right, a nice lad. But on the day, what happened was, this as far as I'm concerned, the gun had been fired. I mean, I could hear what was going on. But I never saw any tanks, but I knew they were there. And a lot of them say there were trailers carrying doing, but I think not. But this is personal. You see, they say that the two that came across, the one first was trailing a gun. Now, if they trailed a gun, in my opinion, they would have to dismantle it from the back, they'd have to turn it round, they'd have to load it and fire it, right? Now, having said that, Adam Wakenshaw was already set up. And he was, if that had happened, in my opinion, Adam would have fired before the other one. Because by the time they got worked round, they were visible. They were 200 yards away, right? So, anyway, regardless of what they were, I thought they were tanks. I thought they were Mark 3 or 4. And, Chris, they can fire immediately. See, they had a target in front of them, boom. Now, they fired first. So, Adam must have known they were there. And anyway, you know, there's been a lot of reports about it, but this report has never been in. What happened, I was in the bottom of the wadi, and Carter, tall lad, was number 4 on that gun. And Davies was number 1 on the gun, he was in charge of the gun. Now, they came down to me, you see, Carter held them down, because Davies, you could lift his scalp up like that. He had a wound in the head, and he had one in the shoulder. And he was in a bad way. But it came down to me, and I said, what's happened like? And Carter explained. And anyway, I just put a field dressing on him, on Davies. And I don't know what happened thereafter. But that's all I know about that.
Then what happened to you now? That's what we're into.
Well, the thing is, that bloke took me prisoner, you see. This is after Carter came down. This bloke took us prisoner, and he took us over the top of the wadi and to where there was a sack of Germans, you know. And they gave me water. They'd been in the boat Nappy at Mersey. And they gave me water, and the other lads, and they gave me Cadbury's chocolate, dark or light, whatever you wanted, and biscuits, sort of thing. They had too much to carry because they were injured, and we were in a bad way anyway because we hadn't had water for a while. And they treated us very well, and eventually, when they got a lot together, they sent six Germans with us. There was four on the corners, and there was two with a machine with a spandrel going round and round, you know, just keeping me in line and walking with the water. There was no war camp. Now, I don't know which way we were, but I presumed we were going towards the road. But anyway, there was a Humber scout car. That's one without big guns and that on wheels and that. Now, it came across. I don't know what made them come across. But anyway, it came across, and Jerry's got ourselves up. There was nothing heroic about it. It was just, it happened that way. So we all got free, and I don't, to this day, I don't know who, what regiment they were, and nothing. And you're always happy to get away. But we got away, and we started to walk. And by that time, it was night, you see. And we saw some fires, and we walked slowly up to it because we had no arms, no nothing. And we went slowly up to it, and here it was the New Zealanders, and they had their fires lit, and they were drunk as noodles.
This was night time.
Night time, yeah. And anyway, we got up to them, they treated us very well. They gave us food, they gave us water. Because they had transport, and shortly after we got in there, we were enjoying ourselves, same as the New Zealanders were. And Jerry put a few shots in, scattered, and because it was a funny thing to do to light, because what he used to do to boil a kettle or something like that, used to half a tin of petrol, and then you used to use part of it for your water and part of it you put sand in and put petrol in, and up she goes and you boil what water you've got anyway to make your tea or whatever you want. And anyway, the Jerry's put some shots in, were scattered. Now, I don't know which way I went. I don't know what happened from then on.
You're on foot.
Yeah. The last thing I can remember is we were walking, and there was only about two or three of us, I'm not sure which, but shortly afterwards, I can't remember a thing. The next thing I remember was that I was somewhere behind, I think I was behind the Alamein line.
That's a long way.
Well, I don't know how I got there.
You could have been picked up, but you don't remember this.
I don't know. And the next thing I remember is there's a path with poles and that in, and there's two MPs leading me. But I don't know where I come to, nowhere. But anyway, they were leading us, and I went into this tent, and it seemed like a brigade headquarters or something like that. But there was a lot of people with brain. And anyway, took us in and asked a few questions. And the next thing I knew was that these MPs was waiting outside, and they got a hold of us, put us on a jeep, and took us into Alex, because I was in a hell of a state. My uniform was ripped, and the Salvation Army, they took us into this place where the Salvation Army was.
Do you recall what questions they were asking you in the tent?
No, I think I was away with a mixture, I think.
Probably just to establish your identity.
Yeah, I don't regiment. Know what they said.
So you went to Alex.
And I went to the Salvation Army, they washed my uniform, they pressed it and repaired it, And then I went into what seemed like I don't know whether it was a barracks or what, it was a big building anyway. And the battalion was in there. And they said there was 117 of us got through. And I made 118 as far as I can tell. So anyway, we got that through. And then we went down to Qatara in the southern part of the line. And we were there. We were close to the jetty, so we could hear them talking. And anyway, we were sent up north.
This must have been the you must have reformed behind the line, got drafts, yes, and so on. Do you remember those drafts coming in?
Yes, the Welsh Regiment.
How did they settle in?
Well, they had to settle in normally because they went at the C Company. C Company had been annihilated, you see, in all this, and C Company was formed from the Welsh Regiment. Now, we were brought up north to put the attack in. Everybody knows where the attack is.
Can you remember, because you were down in the south area of the Alamein line, mm-hmm, for quite some time.
Yeah.
What was the area like down there? What was the terrain like in that area?
Well, it was just sandy and hilly, you know. And the high ties in the main had the line come like that. At the north, it was further apart than it was down south.
They were closer to you.
Yeah, and they had the hills.
And what were you doing down there?
Well, we were just in a stationary line. We didn't do much because you couldn't get through.
Were you patrolling?
No.
You didn't get involved in that?
No. We couldn't because we were too close, you see.
Did any attacks go in down there whilst you were there?
Our own 44th Division were attacking. And they, because the line went like that, they were supposed to attack these two hills here. What happened was, they come under fire. And they turned there, you know, went to put our own guns on them. And I never heard of the 44th again. But I don't know what happened to them.
You mean British artillery fired on their own men,
yes,
in effect?
Mm-hmm.
Was this part of the plan to divert German attention from the main Alamein assault on the 23rd of October?
Yes, I think it might have been, yeah.
And did the 9th Battalion get involved in this?
Oh, yes, we were firing. We had a fire because they were firing on us.
Who was they?
The 44th Division.
They hadn't realised they'd turned in front of you?
No.
In addition to that, though, did any of the 9th Battalion go out to attack enemy positions whilst you were down in the south of the line?
Walking, you'd get patrols. German patrols used to come through, and I was used to go through.
But you didn't get involved in that?
No.
And you were still with S Company?
Still with S Company, yeah. And as I say, when we went, I don't think there was a lot. For me, anyway.
Do you remember the Greeks being in the line with you down there? What were they like?
Well, they were funny. They had sleeves the same as us, but they used to put straw in. And their food, they used to eat everything as one. You know, they'd get fruit. You know, we would have a fruit sometimes, anyway. At two of them, you'd have fruit. As one part of your meal, you'd have your meat or fish or whatever. Everything went in with it. Everything was a stew, meat, fish, whatever they had, they used to put in the big pot, and that was it. And we had a bit of trouble with the passwords, like, with them. But before that, we had the French, you know.